So Shane, believe it or not, the Islanders actually went into Chicago and guess what?
Did they win?
They won a hockey game.
Wow. And we are back here on the Secondary Assist Podcast. Shane Blackburn alongside Andy Graziano. It's been a while since we've done this together. Last week, Andy had EJ Raddick from NHL Network on the show. I, as I said in the intro and the outro, was perusing New York City as if I don't live 45 seconds away from it and go there every day for work. But we are back. We are ready to talk some Islanders hockey. Some positives going on. 4-2 in the last six. I guess that's okay.
There are no positives ever in Islanders land.
I mean, factual statement from Andy Graziano?
You know, I think the concern once again shifts to what we've been talking about, Shane, you and I, since the summer, and that's the defense. You know, I think one thing we saw Saturday, even though they gave up close to 40 shots again, is that a lot of the shots, according to Natural Stat Tricks heat map, were pretty much contained to the outside in low danger areas. So I think I don't mind giving up 40 shots a night if they're all going to come from those locations. But problem is, the last 4 weeks, we've seen them too often coming from other locations.
I think part of the problem, too, is our goaltending isn't necessarily stopping the low danger area shots either.
Right, right. And part of the problem is us, of course, in the media. Of course, we're the problem. Of course.
I mean, why wouldn't we be the problem? Which, by the way, whoop, timeout.
Uh-oh.
So, I'm trying this new thing where I'm not really going on Twitter as often. I'm staying away from sports media as much as possible. And it's absolutely fantastic, by the way.
Like, good for you.
I felt so much better.
I'm proud of you. Ringo's proud of you.
But what the hell is going on with Staple?
Staple is leaving Newsday after a long, illustrious career. And I mean that. It was a long, well done career for Arthur at Newsday. And of course, he's been the Islander beat writer for the last, how long has he been the beat writer for? Four seasons, maybe? Five, perhaps? It's been a while.
Yeah.
It's been the longest stretch I think the Islanders have had with any kind of consistency in the media department. But yeah, he's going to be leaving. No word on where he's going yet. We have our assumptions and our beliefs based on some things that we saw, but nothing official from Arthur himself. Well, we should find out in about a week or so. And I think he's being, you know, he's being a professional and he's playing it the right way and doesn't want to announce where he's going until his time at Newsday is up. And that's going to be, I believe, after the Vegas game on Thursday will be his last Islanders game for Newsday. But I believe that he'll still be around. He might not be in the same day-to-day capacity, but I don't think he's leaving Isle Twitterland just yet.
Poor guy. I bet you he wishes he was getting the hell out of there.
God. Wishes he can go cover the Kings, but all the way on the other side of the world.
So I've been staying away from Twitter and the media and all that, and all of a sudden I come back just to check on one thing, and I see Staple 1 week left in my in my Islanders, like in my Newsday Islanders coverage.
They'll be left with whoever replaces him, which there's a couple of good choices over at Newsday. Mark Herman is a logical assumption. Neil Best is also over there, but Neil really doesn't do the day-to-day side as much as he does kind of editorials and columns. So it'll probably, I'm guessing, be Herman unless they move Laura into that spot. Laura's kind of a jack of all trades for Newsday Sports. They might finally assign her to a beat. I don't know. But
I just hope he doesn't go where I think he's going.
Most consistently, you'll be left with myself and B-Comp and Christian Arnold pretty much as the three most consistent after that, after Arthur leaves.
You know where I think he's going, right?
Bad news for them. You can tell me. I mean, he hasn't announced anything officially, so we could speculate if we wish.
So I literally have only known for like a couple of days that he wasn't going to continue doing Newsday. I've literally been completely out of the loop. And the first thing that came to my mind was, crap, I guess I have to pay to read Staple now.
That is a safe assumption. They've been assembling quite the all-star lineup over there. And I'll tell you, Kustis has done a terrific job getting that off the ground.
He really has.
He has really assembled a great team. And he must be paying pretty damn well because, let's face it, I mean,
look
Justin
at the names
Bourne,
he's bringing over there.
Justin Bourne, who's a terrific writer, by the way, went back to hockey writing for Craig for The Athletic. And he left a job as the Toronto Marlies video guy. to do that, to go back to writing. So Craig must be paying pretty well.
And just to
and for someone like Arthur, who has a wife and two children to support, for him to be making this move, you got to think the salary's pretty good. So good for them.
Just to be completely fair and transparent going forward in the podcast, I absolutely will not be paying to read Arthur Staple. So don't expect me to know all of his latest if that's where he goes.
If that's the case, I would think that means The Athletic is finally doing what I thought they should have done at the start, and that's starting an Athletic New York, right?
Right.
Because The Athletic started as The Athletic, and then they went to branches. The Athletic Detroit, I believe, was the first one. The Athletic Toronto, The Athletic Montreal. So I would think the logical thing would be that there's the logical assumption, again, nothing official, and I don't know anything officially, but the logical assumption would be it's going to be The Athletic New York, and Arthur would go to more of a columnist role rather than a day-to-day reporter role.
I respect what The Athletic is doing.
Mm-hmm.
I refuse to pay a monthly subscription to read articles about sports. First of all,
I find it
extremely hard lately to read free articles about sports. I'm not going to pay to read articles about sports.
Well, it's a tough call, but I think when you assemble the lineup that he has, I think it makes it a little more palatable to go with a paywall subscription site. I think if you're hiring the guys that he's hiring, and these are heavy hitters in the industry.
Oh no, I understand that totally. This is just
it easier because these guys have had a following for all these years, and the chances are pretty good that they're going to get paywall subscribers just from those guys.
I understand the concept, and I understand that 100%. Just from a personal standpoint, I can't do it.
Look how many people pay for ESPN The Insider, and that's rubbish. That's trash.
I can't
believe I have to pay for The Insider to read a freaking column on fantasy baseball. Really?
I've never brought myself to pay for that either.
No, I never have either, but my point is,
although I did work at ESPN for a hot minute, so I got it for free.
I want to see who the top 100 starting pitchers are for the upcoming fantasy baseball drafts, and I got to have The Insider to see that. It's ridiculous.
Although, to be fair, I did ask my boss if he thought the company would pay for an Athletic subscription. Because like it is good for not even for me, I could care less as the producer, but it is good for our hosts. And if our hosts don't want to,
yeah, well, that's like SNY has an Insider subscription. I don't know,
right, exactly.
I should probably ask if they have an Athletic one. I doubt it,
but like
these bigger companies will do that for their writers, yeah.
Right, exactly. I refuse to spend it on a personal standpoint. But if the company's gonna have a universal Athletic account, then sure, I'll use it, but until that point, I will not. And like, I read like the first two paragraphs that are free, and then I just hit X on the browser window and just move
that's
on with my
how
day.
It's done.
I'm
all
a
right,
bad
back
person.
To the
I probably
back to the Islanders. This is boring me. You're boring me.
I feel bad. But back to the Islanders. Islanders 4-2 in their last six, which is pretty good. But I think they're 4-5 in January though, so not as great. A poor
it's
December leading
mirage,
into
though.
What was that?
Is the 4-2 a mirage? Ask yourself that.
I don't think the 4-2 is a mirage. We'll get into why a little bit later. The defense still killing me.
A little bit later. How much time do we have here?
I mean, we're only 8 minutes in, so we got about 22 minutes to go.
Plus, come on.
Most people probably fast forwarded through the first 8 minutes of the show anyway.
Our banter, yeah.
But
this banter.
The defense still killing me. The offense still showing signs of life and still being the only reason this damn team wins any games.
God. What would their record be without the offense they've had? They've shown it would be putrid.
What would the record be if they thought Barzal needed another year in junior?
That too, good point. Well, he couldn't play.
Oh, he would have been Bridgeport.
He'd be in Bridgeport.
And I feel like he would have forced their hand to pull him up.
He did
at this
his
point.
4 years in Seattle with WHL, so he was done there regardless. But
I feel like he would have forced their hand in Bridgeport too, playing like this. I don't
probably
know if they could
I mean,
have kept him down.
I'm glad we got to finally see a little bit of Michael Del Cole, although he'll be scratched for a second straight game this evening in favor of Ross Johnston.
Who had a point.
He had his first NHL point, first NHL fight. He also made a pretty glaring defensive mistake, which led to a goal. Kind of just standing
around
watching
the
plays.
But that's just par for
the
course with the Islanders, isn't it?
Well, again, a guy scores his first NHL goal against the Islanders, go figure, Gustafson.
No.
Absolutely.
Would never have guessed.
on that play, Johnston was just standing around in the high slot, just kind of looking around, taking stock of where he was, I think, while the play went on around him. And backdoor pass by Patrick Kane, and Gustafson roofs it. You know, I still don't. Again, I shudder to think of what this team's record would be without the offense they've shown, because their defense is so ridiculously bad.
Which, by the way, can we just talk about that Chicago game real quick?
Sure.
A minute in, Patty Kane walks in and scores?
Yep.
What did you think? What was the first thing that went through your mind?
What I think, my exact tweet was, you know, Islanders are behind again, a shot that where, you know, you kind of need a save from your goaltender there, especially early. Sometimes you need, you know, it takes a couple of minutes at the beginning of a game to find your footing, and they obviously didn't have their footing. You need your goalie to make a stop there. It's a great shot. Patrick Kane is one of the elite snipers in the league. I'm not going to take that away from him. Never could, never would. But you need your goalie to make a save on that shot. On screen, snapper from the top of the circle. You kind of, you would have liked to have seen a save there. Halak did rebound and play, you know, good the rest of the game, and he's been more than adequate, let me say, over the last couple of weeks, taking a hold of that number one job. So I'm going to give him credit there. But hey, in this league, you've seen it. It's one or two goals could be the difference. So who knew at that point that the Islanders would rip off a 7-3 win, right? But you kind of would like to see a save at that point, at that juncture in the game from that location.
So going into the game, I honestly, I'm not just saying this because they won. Going into the game, I said the Islanders, this was my exact thought, the Islanders are going to beat Chicago.
You're so just saying that because they won.
No, because I'm going to put my foot in my mouth after this. But I said the Islanders are going to beat Chicago, and then they're going to waltz into Arizona and get blown out.
If that happens, you will come face-to-face with the devil himself in Islanders Twitter.
I probably will, but I'm going to stick by it. I said
okay.
They're going to beat Chicago.
I know
Chicago.
You will. You're a stand-up guy. You'll stick to it.
I'll eat the crow when it comes. I hope I'm wrong. Like, I hope I have to eat crow for this, because
I've eaten a lot of shit before as well, and for things I've said, and I've said some stupid stuff, believe me.
And they cannot lose tonight. There's no way they can lose to Arizona tonight. They lose
because
to Arizona
you gotta
tonight.
Think, you got to think they're losing to Vegas.
I mean,
only 10 teams have beaten Vegas all season, which is...
We are one of them.
Ridiculous. I mean, I think someone tweeted out today something like, what did you expect to happen? This was one of the most expansion-friendly drafts in, like, forever. And while that holds some weight, it was a very friendly expansion pool. That still didn't make Vegas on paper the team that you see on the ice and the results that have transpired from it. If you say you saw that coming, you're a freaking liar.
Oh, you're 100%.
It's that simple. You're a liar.
But
this
we are one
lost,
of the...
I think 10 times all year. They've lost, what, twice at home?
We are
season.
One of the few teams to beat them, though.
Yeah, but that was in Barclays. It was earlier in the season when things were really rolling, especially offensively. There's what... Look, we just did our NHLPA... mid-season ballots. It's the first time the NHLPA has done mid-season awards, and the results are going to be released All-Star Weekend. And in fact, I tweeted out a link today from our parent site, thephwa.org, and there's actually a fan ballot as well where you fans can get involved and cast your votes, and those will be tabulated along with ours with the final results coming All-Star Weekend. But, you know, I think one of the obvious questions in there was the Jack Adams Award for the mid-season coach of the year. And there's literally just one choice. I mean, you're writing Gerard Gallant, and you're not writing anybody else.
Yes, you are.
Well, Jared Bednar, I put down in Colorado, who I think's done a remarkable job.
Did you not see Tortorella's comments about playing in Vegas?
I don't think I did.
Tortorella said, "I hope my players go out, because playing guilty is a recipe for good hockey." He should be the Jack Adams Award winner right there.
Love me some torts. The media loves Tortorella, and you're not going to tell me one bit that part of that Tortorella Larry Brooks feud when Torts coached the Rangers was
overblown.
Not overblown, but I think both of them played into it a little bit. But it was great entertainment for us.
You are right, though. Vegas is 18-2-2 at home, so they lost four times at home, but only twice in regulation.
So you got to think they're going to spank the crap out of us. You have to go tonight. If you're assuming a loss Thursday, you have to win tonight and go 2-1 on the trip.
Okay, no. So let me ask you this:
what?
Tonight's a must-win. You can't lose to an Arizona team, a playoff team.
Not an Arizona team that has 11 wins.
Right.
No.
At this point in the season, a playoff team cannot lose to Arizona.
I agree,
but
we're also not a playoff team right now, but go ahead.
Beat Chicago the other night, right? Beat Chicago on Saturday.
Yep.
If they lose to Arizona tonight,
Yep.
And pull out a win against Vegas. Is it still a success at 2-1, or is it not a success because you lost to Arizona?
Of course. I think it's a success because you made up for the Arizona loss by beating, which is close to being the best team in hockey.
But why make it hard on yourself to have to beat Vegas right. when you could just take care of Arizona tonight?
You beat if you take care of business tonight and then you win Thursday, it's gravy.
Tell me that's not the most Islander thing to do, though. Beat Chicago, beat Vegas, and lose to Arizona.
Probably. I hope you're wrong.
By the way, Arizona is 5-14-3 at home.
Actually, the most Islanders thing to do would be to drop tonight's game and then lose Thursday going 1-3 when you could have gone 2-1.
That's a fair point. How'd you go from 2-1 to 1-3, though? Where'd that fourth game come from?
I just made that up in my mind just now.
I mean, that Boston loss was atrocious.
I've told
everybody
I'm horrible at math. I've always been, and I'll never be better.
I was going to say something, but I won't.
I use Excel at work all the time. I use the calculator on my phone to figure out a tip at the restaurant. I'm that retarded when it comes to math.
I just ask other people for tips at their. I'm like, what should we give them? All right, cool. And see, what I normally do is I say, what should we give them, and then add $2 to it because I like to tip big.
I feel for the people in that service industry, so I always start at 25%.
I scale
up or down from there depending on the level of service because I don't feel that. If you give me 15% of service, why the hell should I tip you 25?
I did it for about 4 years.
Yeah, you're getting what you deserve from me, and I always start out at 25%. I'm a good tipper, but also don't give me shit service either.
I agree. We're giving Islander fans shit service on the podcast
right.
today.
Don't give me a dirty plate and dirty silverware and a glass with Cascade spots on it. And expect your, standard, I believe, is 20%. Don't expect the standard if that's what you're giving me.
I think standard is 15. I don't know when it went up to 20, but I always give at least 20, 25.
My standard was always 20, honestly. It was always my starting point.
I find myself getting yelled at when we go out to dinner because I try and give 30, but whatever.
If the service is excellent, I have no problem doing that.
All right, but let's get back to the Islanders just for a couple of minutes. Then we'll go off on another tangent again in a couple after that. But I just want to talk about my new favorite Islanders line.
Oh, yes, the new second line with Anthony Beauvillier, who I've been hard on all year, and rightfully so. He was brutal before his demotion to Bridgeport.
I don't even think brutal does it justice.
He was suffering, obviously, from a lack of confidence, and he was playing on a crappy line and not really getting a lot of chances. Now the kid goes down to Bridgeport, does exactly what he's supposed to do, continues to work hard, picks his confidence up, starts scoring a couple of goals down there, playing some offense, and comes back up. They place him on a line with Matthew Barzal and Jordan Eberle in the absence of Andrew Ladd, and that line has just taken off, and Beauvillier is showing what he can do when he's placed with
talent.
An infusion. You see, someone said that to me today about, well, of course Beauvillier has taken off. He's playing on a real scoring line now, and I get that. There's some truth to that. Obviously, when you play with better players, you're going to get better opportunities. However, I think Beauvillier really came back up from Bridgeport with the right mindset. Everything from his body language to his confidence is up. I talked to him at Madison Square Garden after the 7-2 drubbing of the Rangers coming off the bye, and you could just tell the kid had a different feel about him, a different aura around him, and I think that's what he gained in Bridgeport. It was a very good demotion by the Islanders, honestly. And he's come up and worked his tail off, and he's done. He's kind of been the anti-Josh Hosang in that sense.
See, I don't think he's necessarily just a product of the line he's on right now.
Right.
I think he's making his own opportunities, and I honestly believe he's improved this line.
But when you're playing with guys like that, that's not.
But I don't think he's just a passenger on this line.
No, right. But I'm saying it does make it easier when you're playing with Matthew Barzal and Jordan Eberle as opposed to Brock Nelson and Jason Chimera.
Oh, 100%. But I don't think he's just a passenger for Barzal and Eberle. I think he is actively contributing.
Oh, I thought the other night in Chicago he was the Islanders' best forward in all three zones.
And
I think it was fantastic defensively, even outside of the two goals he scored.
So when he was sent down,
mm-hmm.
Beauvillier had four goals and three assists when he went down. In the last six games since Beauvillier has been recalled and has been placed on the line with Barzal and Eberle, as a line combined, they have 11 goals, 17 assists, and 28 points.
In six games.
Beauvillier has six goals and an assist for 7 points. He has half of his season point total in the past six games. He has 14 total. He has seven of them in the past six games after being put with Barzell and Eberle. Eberle has two goals and seven assists for nine points.
Eberle. How do we say that? You really put the enunciation on that.
Eberle.
Eberle.
And then my man Barzell with three goals and nine assists for 12 points, leading the way for not just that line, but the Islanders over the past
six
games.
Baby Barzy.
Averaging 2 points a game over the past six games since getting Beauvillier
remember,
on his line.
Remember when you asked me, what you asked me a while back about Baby Barzy, and you asked me if he had a shot at how many points? 70?
I'm going to go back and find it, but I think I said seven. I said 80. I said he was going to hit 80.
You said he was going to hit almost a point a game.
Yeah.
Dude, you're looking like you could be right.
Yeah, I said he's going to be at 80 points, and because I said just under. I didn't want to give him the point per game. I said just under, he'll be at 80.
Shane, if this kid hits a point per game in his freshman season, if he hits 80 points in his freshman season, that's ridiculous.
He's at
49. Not many guys have been able to do that.
He's at 49 through 48 games.
Crazy. And I said this during the Chicago game, and I was testing people's ability to learn context after the Brent Thompson baby fiasco comment. I was testing our ability to see if we learned anything in Isles Twitter land about context. The way Matt Barzal skates, his balance, his agility, his seemingly tendency to not get hit, per se, quote unquote hit, reminds me very much of Sidney Crosby in Pittsburgh. It does. I'm not saying that Barzal is Crosby or he'll be Crosby and he's going to go on to. I'm not saying that. I'm saying purely from a skating angle, from a skating perspective, the wide stance, the tremendous balance, the ability to stop and start on a dime, and the ability to not get hit is really Sidney Crosby, is reminiscent of Sidney Crosby. It is. Take a look at both players and tell me I'm wrong.
And Barzal's getting praise around the league from players and other coaches because of his skating ability, and because every time he touches the puck, you could feel the electricity around him, and you know something is going to happen. Whether the puck winds up in the back of the net or not, the opportunity is going to be there for the Islanders, and I think that's the biggest thing for Barzal. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb here, so be ready to save me when
another,
Isles Twitter
another
comes.
Another one?
Yeah.
You're going to go out on another one?
Barzal's rookie season overall is better than Tavares's. And it's because of his skating ability. It's strictly because of his skating ability, because Tavares had to work extremely hard to get his skating to where it is at this point in his career. His skating was nowhere near, never mind Barzal. His skating as a rookie was nowhere near what it is for himself at this point in his career. He had to work hard to get there.
JT was up against it his freshman year. Let's not be.
He had no help
about that.
No, he had absolutely no
help. Zero.
But Barzal's skating ability, for me, makes his instantly more exciting.
Yes.
And more electric to watch because he's able to use his feet, where Tavares always had to rely on either one, his hands, or two, hoping Trent Hunter and Kyle Okposo were going to be able to get the puck back to him. Barzal is able to rely on he doesn't even have to have which he does have good hands. We saw that in the Edmonton game where he made whoever the defenseman was look ridiculous. He's able to make those moves with the puck, but he doesn't need to because he could just turn on the Jets and very few people in the NHL are staying with him. I mean, the overtime game against Ottawa, he literally just skated around the offensive zone 46. The overtime game against Montreal, he passed the puck to himself twice because he thought there was going to be someone there and they went the wrong way, and he still went and got it.
But it's something that voters, when it comes down to the end of the season, prior to the playoffs, and we all get together in the NHLPA and vote on the Cowler Trophy, it is going to come down to, in the eyes of the voters, the team support
Vancouver
that Barzal
has had versus
Brock Boeser in Vancouver. Come down to that. And Barzal has been doing himself a favor by getting his goal total up there a little bit, right? Making the difference between himself and Boeser right now palatable, where I think Barzal is slightly in the lead right now. And I had my ballot that way for the midseason. I had Barzal first and Boeser second. Now, again, the voters are going to look at that. They're going to look at the talent they've had with them and the talent they've had around them. So I don't think it's it's not even close to being anywhere near a done deal right now. I think that's going to be a battle that we see continue all the way through game 82.
And that's good for the NHL. I would love Matt Barzal to win the Calder Trophy. But
the infusion of young talent's been terrific for the league.
Exactly.
Terrific.
I mean, Barzal's got 49 points in 48 games. He's got 8 more than Boeser. Boeser has 41. He does have more goals than Barzal, but like you said, Barzal's been getting that up. He's got 16 goals, 33
Boeser's
assists.
Boeser's got 22, I think, right?
Now, my question is...
Boeser's got 22?
I believe Boeser has 22. How many of Barzal's assists are secondary?
Oh, there you go again. I'm not looking right now. I don't like...
I could care less, because... Honestly,
I think a lot of them are probably primary, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, so he has 33 assists and Eberle has 16 goals.
Eric Hornick said he's assisted on 11 of 16 nice. Eberle goals, I believe.
Very nice. All right. So, well, by the way, Eberle has a surprising amount of assists, too, because you figure he'd
Eberle's having a terrific year.
But he'd be on the higher goal end playing with Barzal, but he's got 16 goals, 22 assists.
If you project him out, he's on his pace for his his typical 30-goal season, 60 points or so, 65 points, 70 maybe. And I think that there's no questioning that Garth Snow, when it comes to – for all the blame that Garth Snow deserves, let's say – and he deserves a lot. He's been able to take advantage of some cap-strapped teams when he picked up Johnny Boychuk and Nick Leddy, obviously, a couple of years ago. And same thing here when he picked up Jordan Eberle for Ryan Strom. He's been able to make those kind of deals because he's left himself cap flexibility. Now that cap flexibility's going away, especially with the impending status of John Tavares, Josh Bailey, Calvin DeHaan, blah, blah, blah. You get through them. Then you have...
Oliver Ekman-Larsson when they... what?
You have Barzal coming off his ELC. You're going to have Anders Lee looking for a payday. That cap flexibility is starting to go away. And those deals that he signed Casey Cizikas and Cal Clutterbuck to are going to start to look a little worse over the long term. And I think he still needs to make a move or two to improve this year's team and get them over the hump. I don't think that in the year of Belmont and the year of Tavares... I don't think that not making the playoffs is an option. And we're going to see in the next 6 weeks if he's got the gumption and the wherewithal to, you know, use the assets that he got in the Travis Hamonic deal and pull something off. But
I don't even want to start speculating on that, though, because God knows.
No,
what.
But it's clear in general that they need to do something.
This defense
is not going to hold up. It's not going to hold up in the last 30 games. It's certainly not going to hold up in the playoffs.
Has to happen. I'm just not going to be the one to say what it should be.
No, because we're going to have to see where the market sets itself. I mean, right now the market is very high, which is expected because it's early. There's still a little over five weeks to the deadline. February 26th is the trade deadline this year. So there's a little more than 5 weeks to the deadline. So those prices will adjust over that course, and you'll see new teams become sellers and other new teams become buyers. So we don't know that. That's not set in stone yet. But right now, the defenseman market looks shitty. Let's face it. I mean, you're not getting Oliver Ekman-Larsson. You're not getting Erik Karlsson. So forget it. You're not getting those guys. Okay? Let's just end that fantasy right now. You're not getting those guys. So you're looking at a second or third tier of guys like cement-shoed Dion Phaneuf or bruised and battered Paul Martin, right? Guys like that. It's not looking like a very favorable defenseman market, certainly not one where you want to trade first, second round picks in a very deep draft.
What if they just trade to get Hamonic back?
Jack Johnson, another one. Jack Johnson, I like Jack Johnson. He's a good player, but Jack Johnson is going to be an unrestricted free agent, so he's more of a rental. He's going to be looking for a big payday because everyone forgets that in 2014, Jack Johnson had to file bankruptcy because his parents ripped him off, right?
Which is insane.
It's crazy, but Jack Johnson's going to be looking to hit it pretty big in free agency because he needs the cash. So I like Jack Johnson, but are you trading a first round pick in a deep draft to get him for 3 months?
No, thank you.
Especially if you don't think that he puts you in contention for the Stanley Cup.
Which he absolutely doesn't.
Right. I like him, like I said, but teams who are getting those players and giving up first round picks for those players are teams that are close to the Stanley Cup contention. That's the bottom line. Rentals usually go to teams that feel they're close to Stanley Cup contention, not a team that says, oh, well, we need to make the playoffs for Tavares and win a round or two.
That's why I refuse to speculate, at least until we get closer and we have a better idea of what's available. I refuse to speculate right now. I'm not even going to try my hand at it.
People ask us every day to speculate. I tell them all the time, it's a very, very tough thing to speculate on. Even if I do get stuff from sources on players who are available or players who Garth Snow might be talking about or specifically talking about trading from the team, I don't put that out there because I don't feel it's fair to the player, to be honest with you, because trade talks are so fluid and they happen and change seemingly every minute. I don't feel it's fair to the player, and I would never undercut a player like that by putting his name in the media. Oh, Garth Snow is looking to trade player A, for instance, right? I don't like doing that. I don't feel it's fair. We have that power, and I don't feel it's necessarily fair for us to wield that power. There's some certain things that fans shouldn't know. You know, Garth Snow will be looking. He'll be talking. Will he get anything done? That's the big question.
So here's all I'm going to say on that. I'm going to say the defense obviously needs to improve, and I hope that – I mean, we do have the assets, so I hope that Snow has the ability to pull it off. And until we get closer to the deadline and we have a better idea of the market, that's all I'm going to say on that. Don't ask me on Twitter.
And I'll promise this. If there's something that I get – that I can put out there without exchanging too much, I'll do it. If I get some news that Snow is close to something or is talking about a certain player on Team X, I'll put that player's name out there. If it's verified and it comes from someone who I trust and is reliable with that kind of information. But just to be clear, I'm not going to be putting out anything from the Islanders' side that, Brock Nelson's being talked about or this team wants Anthony Beauvillier and, you know, Snow was thinking about trading Matt Barzal, which basically burned Twitter to the ground. But not that he's going to ever do that. I'm just saying, hypothetically speaking, I don't put names of the team I cover down because I don't feel it's fair to them. And there is some integrity left in this business and some professionalism, and that's kind of the way I play it.
Now,
so if you want that stuff, go somewhere else for it. That's all I'm going to say.
Now, before we get out of here, I want to do two quick things. One is we did have a Twitter question from like almost 5 days ago, and it was from Doc_ad. Mm-hmm. And he said, what do you think of this for overtime? Instead of shootouts, Team A gets to play 5-on-4 for 2 minutes, then Team B gets to play 5-on-4 for 2 minutes. If Team B scores and Team A doesn't, they win. Mm-hmm. If Team A scores, Team B doesn't, they win. If they both score, you keep going. Any shorthanded goal automatically wins. So if the team with four scores, it's an automatic win.
I understand what that means, Shane. Thanks for that. Thanks. I know. I understand. I understood what that meant, but thanks anyway.
I wasn't explaining it for you.
You basically called me a dumbass.
I guess I was calling our listening base dumbasses, I guess.
Everyone knows I can't stand the shootout. I talked about it last week with EJ Raddick on the show. I hate it. In a perfect world, it's 3-on-3 for 10 minutes. Call it a tie. Everyone go home. In a perfect world, that's what it is for me. And there's really no substitutes for that. I like what Doc said. It's a novel idea. It's more of a twist on the college football format. I'm more of a straightforward guy. I love 3-on-3 hockey. I think it's fantastic.
I love the 3-on-3.
You give the fans 3-on-3 hockey, and then you have to throw them the shootout, too? Screw that. Get rid of that stupid shootout, that stupid one-on-one skills competition. It's bullshit. Give the fans the 3-on-3, which is way more exciting than a one-on-one bullcrap shootout. Have them play like that for 10 minutes, and then everyone goes home. Call it a tie. Each team gets a point. You get rid of that loser point crap. Everyone goes home with a point. Everyone goes home happy. Or as happy as they can be in hockey Twitter.
I think you go to a three-point system. 3 for a win, 2 for an overtime win, 1 for a tie.
So basically more math. Yeah, thanks a lot.
All right, fine. So go back to how it used to be. 2 for a win, 2 for an overtime win, 1 for a tie.
2 for 2. Yeah, that's what I just said.
But I'm saying I agree with you.
Get rid of the loser point. You lose, you lose. That's it.
See, but I just like the three.
It's simple. 2 points for a win.
Aren't you a Chelsea fan?
Asshole. 2 points for a
math,
win.
Math, numbers.
2 points for a win. And yes, I am a Chelsea fan. 2 points for a win. No points for a loss. 1 point for a tie. That's it. Done.
See,
boom.
I, I just like the 3-point system from the Premier League. That's where I was coming up with the
3-point. I know where you were going from.
And like all soccer, not just the Premier League, all soccer.
Yeah. But again, it goes back to that bull crap too. And when you lose or win, in this case, and I've celebrated the fruits of winning like that when Italy won the World Cup and when Chelsea won the Champions League. Winning that kind of tournament on penalty kicks is bogus.
Yeah.
It does take away from it. You can't tell me it doesn't. It clearly takes away from it. But soccer is a totally different animal. These guys can't run around for freaking 240 minutes. Right?
I've hated the shootout since even
me too.
Like a lot of people loved it the first year, thought it was cool. I hated it from the get-go. I didn't even like
it. I've left games as a fan at the end of overtime because that's how much I hate it. When I cover it, I'll usually stay in. Usually I leave the press box with about 3 to 4 minutes left in the third period. I'll start walking down to the press room to get ready to go into the locker room. If the game goes into overtime, sometimes I'll stay. Sometimes I will still leave and then watch the rest on the monitor downstairs, but other times I'll stay and watch it live. As soon as the shootout happens, I could literally care less. Literally, I can care less.
I hate it.
It's awful.
All right, and then the second thing I wanted to say was don't be surprised if over the next couple of weeks in February, part of this podcast is curling-based because the Olympics start, and I love curling. So deal with it.
Well, you will be solo the first two shows in February because I will be in Italia.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me you were going to Pyeongchang, and I was like, yo, that's awesome.
I'm not going to Pyeongchang. I'm going to Italia from February 5th to the 16th.
So I got
to
do two solo shows?
You got to do two solo shows.
Oh, it's about time I'm going to be able to get out there and market myself instead of having that
carry. Those shows will be about a minute left. They'll last each about a minute.
No, I'm going to pre-record it right now. Here's the first show. Islanders suck. Defense bad. Offense good. Okay, that's show one.
It'll be 30-minute show with about 1 minute of useful information.
Although I have to say, if I don't have to carry you for those 2 weeks, the show will probably be really good.
No, what you should do is get like a stand-in. We have a lot of people that we know across the industry. Let's just get someone to stand in for 2 weeks.
I'm telling you right now, one of those weeks I'm bringing in a curling expert, and it's going to be a curling show.
You better not. I better not come back and hear a goddamn curling episode.
Or
right now.
Or it might just be a Team USA is getting smacked in the Olympics episode.
I actually asked EJ that. I'm like, you guys still do that? Do Canadians still do that? And I know EJ's American, but I'm saying he's around them so much. I'm like, do Canadians still do that? I asked Steve Dangle that too. I was talking to Dangle the other day, and I asked him the same thing because he said something about curling, and I'm like, you guys still do that?
First of all, curling is the best part of the Winter Olympics.
So stupid.
Here's my list of Winter Olympics that I'm going to enjoy watching: curling 1, figure skating 2. I love the figure skating.
Yeah.
One, they are 10 times better on their feet than NHL players,
yeah,
and you could
that.
Never tell
yeah.
me otherwise.
No doubt about it. Well, I mean, Laura Stamm was an NHL instructor for forever.
She, and I went to a bunch of her camps. She actually helped me
terrific
a lot with my ankle.
Terrific. Terrific skater.
And then number 3 is the skiing, because those people are all insane.
I'm actually looking forward to the hockey. I think that I've always been a purist. I've always been kind of an amateur. I feel that the Olympics is amateur. Why the hell are the sports professionals? It's so stupid.
Give these
kids who otherwise wouldn't have a shot a chance to play and medal for their country. What's better than that? I mean,
I'm looking more forward
let,
to the
give them a chance to do it.
I'm looking more forward to the hockey now than
exactly,
I literally
right.
have been in years.
Thank God the pros aren't going. Screw the pros. The pros, they have enough freaking fame and prestige and money.
No,
let these kids get a shot.
I'll say I got it for a couple of years where the NHL is still fighting to hold their place.
They're never going to have a place in this country.
My problem is soccer is going to freaking pass them.
Maybe. It's always going to be football, baseball, basketball, golf.
Basketball is passing baseball and is working its way up on football. It'll never pass football, but it's working its way up there.
Freaking beer pong is above hockey in America, crying out loud.
I wish curling would work its way up there, Jesus.
Oh, would you stop with the curling?
All
go join a league or something, bro.
All right. Well, God. I'm going to go eat dinner so I could watch the Islanders hopefully not get blown out in Arizona. I think Andy's going
to
do the same. Make sure you look out for Andy's post game on SNY because it's a road game, right? So that means you're doing it.
Wow, I am impressed.
I am good, right?
I am very impressed.
Make sure you look for that tomorrow on SNY. He's Andy Graziano. Follow him on Twitter at @AndyGraz_SNY.
That I am.
I'm Shane Blackburn. Follow me on Twitter at SBlackburn26. Don't expect much. I'm still trying this whole stay away from Twitter kick, and it's, I'm telling you, my blood pressure has been so low that it's been fantastic for these past couple of weeks. Go enjoy the Islander game. You're going to be listening to this on Tuesday, so I hope you enjoyed the Islander game and enjoy Thursdays against Vegas. If you're going, be safe.
Be careful.
Be smart. And remember, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. This has been the Secondary Assist Podcast.